seated. Welcome to the 3 o'clock docket of the Second Court of Appeals. We have two cases on our 3 o'clock docket. And our first case, if the clerk will call it, we'll get started.
The court will now call DFW International Airport Board versus NJ Morgan. May it please the court, Mr. Jeff Anderson will argue for the appellant, Mr. Ron Walton will argue for the appellate.
May it please the court, your honors. Thank you for agreeing to allow DFW to present oral argument in this case as requested. My name is Jeff Anderson, and I represent the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport Board, which I will refer to as DFW hereinafter. This case is before the court based on the denial of a motion for summary judgment, which in fact set forth a plea to the jurisdiction additionally on behalf of DFW. And just briefly, I know you've all read the record, but I will go through the procedural and factual history so that we're all on the same page. Procedurally, the plaintiff filed her lawsuit in August of 11, 2 years after she fell at DFW Airport. The case was filed in Dallas County. Mandatory venue applies to DFW, and it was transferred to Tarrant County, where it ended up in Judge McCoy's court. DFW then asserted its motion for summary judgment based on several grounds, specifically that there was no formal written notice given under the Tort Claims Act, and there was no actual notice to DFW under the Tort Claims Act. Judge McCoy denied it, and DFW perfected its interlocutory accelerated appeal. To begin with, there are no issues as to jurisdiction and as to whether or not this court
Excuse me, can you clarify, since this is all recorded, which Judge McCoy you're talking about ruled below?
Judge Susan McCoy ruled below, not Justice McCoy, Judge McCoy over here, or the Judge McCoy, who is now the Justice McCoy, formerly sat on the in the district court in Tarrant County.
No relation. Between
no relation.
Or mentioned McCoys.
No relation. As we look at this case, there is no issue as to whether or not DFW has properly invoked the jurisdiction of the court, and the court's review of the lower court's decision today is de novo because the issue presented to the court is a question of law. Additionally, some other issues have fallen away, and we focus today on the narrow issue of actual notice because the plaintiff does not contend and the record does not support any formal written notice under Section 101.101 of the Texas Tort Claims Act. Just briefly, formal written notice requires notice of the incident, the time and date of the injury complained, and the incident itself. Actual notice is an exception to allow plaintiffs who do not provide formal written notice of the ability to file a claim under the Tort Claims Act if the entity has actual notice. And the key case here, and we'll be talking about essentially five or six cases today. The key case here is Booth versus Cathy, Texas Supreme Court case, to determine whether or not an entity has actual notice. And the Supreme Court in Booth versus Cathy said specifically that in order for a governmental entity to have actual notice, it must also have notice of the items required in 101.101A, and that's notice that there was an incident, when it occurred, where it occurred, and who was involved. But in order for the entity to have actual notice, the documents or other facts relied on by the plaintiff in alleging actual notice must give the governmental entity knowledge of its probable culpability or potential fault. So as we examine what the record here is to determine whether or not there's actual notice, it's instructive to first look at Booth versus Cathy. In Booth versus Cathy, which I'm sure this court is aware of and Justice Dofano has written opinions on it, is a case in the emergency room involving a C-section. And the records that the plaintiff said gave the hospital notice of its potential culpability were medical records that indicated her C-section had been performed at the wrong location on her body. That particular fact, the Texas Supreme Court said, did not give the governmental entity, the hospital, notice of its potential culpability. After Booth versus Cathy, the Texas Supreme Court again wrote on actual notice in the Simons case, although it did not determine what actual notice was in that case because it dismissed the appeal for other reasons. Justice Hecht went into a very long discussion of the concept behind the pronunciation in Booth versus Cathy, and that the documents that the plaintiff was relying on, whatever they were, had to specifically state that the governmental entity had some potential fault. The next case we turn to is Benavides versus DFW, which I handled at the trial court but did not handle on appeal. And Benavides is very much like this case. Benavides involved a car wreck out at the airport where an individual on a rainy day hit a wet spot, spun out, ran into a bridge abutment, and suffered serious injuries. The plaintiff in that case said that DFW had actual notice of the claims because of the police report, which in that case did not say anything about DFW's culpability, but eight other police reports that had occurred before showing accidents of a similar kind or nature in wet circumstances at the same location. This court in that case, Judge Walker at the trial court, and this court in that case said no, those documents do not give DFW actual knowledge of its potential culpability. So let's look and see what we've got here. What we have here that the plaintiff points to indicate DFW's potential culpability are three investigative reports that were generated by different entities at the airport.
Are we going to talk about the ambulance report?
Yes, the EMS report. The EMS report first. And the EMS report indicates that the plaintiff herself relayed to one of the EMS employees, which are DFW employees, that she slipped in something slick. There's no indication there how long the slick substance was there, how the slick substance got there, or that DFW was in any way responsible for the slick substance
How would the plaintiff ever know that?
How would the plaintiff know?
Yes, how would the plaintiff know how long it's been there and how it got there when she just walked up and slipped on it? How, if that's what's required to give actual notice, how could a plaintiff ever give actual notice?
That's not is what is required to give actual notice, but that is what is required to establish a cause of action under the Tort Claims Act 101-021 for liability in a premises case.
Exactly, but we're talking about notice, and I was understanding that you were saying that these reports did not contain those items, did not contain an indication of how long the substance had been there or how it had gotten there, and that was your complaint about the notice.
Those are some of the complaints about the notice. How the plaintiff would know that, she probably wouldn't.
Well, then how can the plaintiff ever include that in actual notice, or how can the plaintiff be sure that you get that?
What the plaintiff could tell us is what it was. And
how would the plaintiff know what it is?
They usually do. Having done about 40 or 50 of these out there, they usually say it was oil, it was grease, it was this. Whenever there
is a... Well, we have a report that says it was an oily substance.
Well, we have a report later that says it was an oily substance. We also have deposition testimony in the record that it was coffee creamer. None of these things, simply the issue of whether or not there was a slick substance on an area does not give DFW knowledge of its potential culpability for two reasons. First of all, the other defendants in this case are the contractors that DFW has retained to clean that area. And it is their responsibility, and the plaintiff has brought the lawsuit against them, to clean that area. But simply because someone says, hey, I fell on a wet spot or a slick spot in a garage where there are slick spots, does not give DFW any indication that we're at fault for that slick spot being there. All it does is give DFW indication that that's what the plaintiff said. And so that's what we have in the first in the EMS report. And the second thing we have is a call out from the AOC, or actually it's the operations center, where they go out to look to see what went on and what happened. And it was reported that there was a leaky sewage area. And they went and looked at that and determined that that had nothing to do with the area that the plaintiff was talking about. So not only do we have one report that the plaintiff says there was a slick spot, but no other information other than that. The second report indicates that when they went out there, the cleaning crews were cleaning that slick spot, as they're required to do. And then we have another report that says, oh, I went out because they said there may have been a leaking sewage pipe, but there wasn't. That sum total of the information is what the plaintiff must rely on to establish actual knowledge. And if this court looks at that sum total of information with the eye of Booth versus Cathy and Justice Hecht's writing in Simons, I believe that it must conclude that none of that creates actual notice. Even, in fact, if you compare it to Benavidez, which this court has already said doesn't create actual notice, it's the same exact information. It's water pooling on a roadway in a location where water has pooled on the roadway before. That alone is not sufficient to constitute actual knowledge. Now, there is a case that Justice Dofano wrote on, which is on the other side of the cases that we need to look at, and that's the Ryan case. And that is against DFW, and I'm sure this court is aware of the facts in Ryan. And as you look back on Ryan, which we did not handle, I think the case was presented to this court incorrectly, because the Ryan case did not involve an actual notice issue. The Ryan case really was about the sufficiency of the written notice that the plaintiff gave within the six-month period. Because Ms. Ryan did send a letter to DFW within 2 months of her injury and said, I was the victim, I fell on your icy road, and here's where it happened, here's my name, and send me the report. All that happened within the six-month period. Now, the Ryan opinion is written on whether or not that letter of, I am the victim, I've been harmed by you, creates actual notice. When it probably was framed that way as it came up from the trial court.
That was the issue.
But that's the issue that they presented to this court. And really clearly before this court, as you pointed out, when she writes a letter to DFW and says, I was the victim, here's where it happened, here's what happened, that's sufficient written notice under 101-101A to satisfy her obligation. But here, we don't have any of that. We don't have any letter, any indication from any of the plaintiffs that DFW actually did something wrong. And simply the fact that Justice Walker pointed out that there is a slick spot in a garage is not sufficient notice to give actual notice to DFW. If it were, every incident report that was generated by DFW, and realize it's larger than the island of Manhattan in mileage, in square footage, sorry. Every report generated out there, and there are hundreds a day, that indicated that someone got hurt somewhere would give DFW actual notice of its potential culpability, and that's not the law as it is in the state of Texas. And as we look,
did somebody else slip the same day in the same place?
That is a good question. What the plaintiff has said is that DFW is on notice because another American Airlines employee fell in the same location and reported that to a DFW employee. It is true that after this incident occurred, an employee from American Airlines claims to have told someone at DFW that she fell in the same spot. But even in that discussion, there's no indication or allegation that DFW did something wrong or didn't do something wrong.
What about some leak from the elevator?
The leak from the elevator is in a different location from the incident. There is that document in the report, but that doesn't have anything to do with the fall or the location where this occurred. So my time is running short, but in conclusion, because the papers that are involved in this case amount to the exact same type of information that were in Booth versus Cathy, in Benavidez, and in Carbajal, another Texas Supreme Court case, this court should reverse the trial court's denial of DFW's motion for summary judgment and instruct the trial court to grant summary judgment for DFW and reverse the opinion of the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court. I am satisfied with the brief that I filed on this, and I don't feel the need to rehash everything in there at this time. There are, however, a couple of things that I wanted to clear up. There seems to be some confusion, and the first one deals with the affidavit of Mr. Holloman, which is the evidence that has been that was presented at the summary judgment by DFW. And in the pleadings, there's claims that there was no request for a ruling, and I just wanted to read a section of the transcript of that. This is me talking in a quote. And so the affidavit of Ed Holloman, and I'd like to ask for the court's ruling on the affidavit. I've objected to it. I've asked that the affidavit be struck in total, and I wondered if the court would rule on the request that it be struck in total. And then the response was, all right, well, guys, you're already running over, and I have my next hearing here, so I'm going to take this under advisement. All things, including the ruling on the affidavit. So I just want to clarify that the question of did I ask for a ruling on the affidavit, I asked for one. I can't say that it would hold up to be done properly, but it was certainly done. The other thing that concerns me is the representations about the interplay between a American Airlines employee, Ms. Colleen Bessinger, and a employee and an employee of the DFW Airport Board, Chad, and I'll probably murder his last name, Chad Shkaweska. He had been an employee of American Airlines, and so Colleen Bessinger knew him from their work relationship, and he indicated that he went there to that site of where our client fell, and while he was there, and I think it was him that identified and said that when he first looked at it, it looked kind of like it was coffee creamer, but then he reached down and touched it and confirmed that it was not coffee creamer, it was some oily substance. But in any case, when he was talking to Ms. Bessinger, she was telling him about having fallen hours prior. I think on the way into work when she went to work on that shift. And so this, I don't think, provides notice, per se, for DFW Airport that the of my client's injury, but what I think that helps us with, the importance of that, is that the premises holder, DFW Airport, knew that our client was an invitee. She knew that the premises where she fell was their premises. They knew that there was an oily substance there that she blamed that it caused her to fall. They knew that she was injured. She was taken away in an ambulance. And what this indicates further is that the knew or should have known element of is DFW going to be liable? You know, is there a claim? Well, if there is enough time for this property controller to get in there and do a reasonable inspection, if they're doing reasonable inspections, if the dangerous condition had been there for long enough that they should have discovered it, well then, as a premises holder, they are liable and they should recognize that it is a claim. So the fact that DFW knew that she had fallen hours earlier in the same location is part of their knowledge that there is a claim. And I also wanted to point out that the decision in Benavides was made in 1997, well before the Supreme Court made the ruling in the Simons case. And in the Simons case, the court specifically pointed out that the notice, that the actual notice requirement, even though that it had changed from the statutory definitions, they were talking about their interpretation in earlier cases. They said, we did not mean that the governmental unit was required to know that the claimant had actually made an allegation of fault. And that's what Benavides is all about, that there was no allegation of fault made, and therefore there was no notice. Well, the Supreme Court in 2004 made the ruling in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice versus Simons, indicating that the notice does not require notice that the injured person is making a claim, only that there is a claim there. The affidavit of Mr. Hallman, the way I calculated it, he started work, his first day working for DFW Airport Board was over 800 days after my client was injured there, way after the end of the 6 months where somebody might know something about what DFW thought, what risk management folks at DFW Airport Board thought or considered or knew. And so he has provided an affidavit and he has alleged that he has his own personal knowledge. And in my brief, I indicated the areas of the other affidavits that he'd had that were not accurate, that were changed because they just simply weren't true. And now in the reply brief, I see that DFW's position is that the position, that since he got the position in the risk management department, that that's what gave him personal knowledge. And that puzzles me. To me, it's like saying that President Obama's position gives him personal knowledge of what all went on between President Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. It's just not true. He doesn't have personal knowledge of what happened during that 6 months that he was not even a part of DFW Airport Board. So his affidavit should be struck and should have been struck, in my estimation, by Judge McCoy at the trial level, but she did not rule either way on my objection to his affidavit. So what DFW knew on the day or days, now we've never found out why the risk management got a copy of the EMS report. The copy that we got was stamped risk management received and the date, which was 6 days after the occurrence. So less than a week after the accident, they had these records. They knew that Ms. Boykin was an invitee. They knew that she was injured on their premises. They knew there was a claim that there was an oily substance that caused her to be injured. And then after their employee talked to Ms. Bessinger probably 30 or 45 minutes after my client's fall, they found out that the slick substance had been on that area and had been a dangerous condition for several hours before my client fell. And so it's like the perfect storm. If you're a risk management department and you know that an invitee has fallen on a dangerous condition on your property and has been injured, and that the dangerous condition was there for hours beforehand, then I believe you've got knowledge of a claim. You don't have knowledge that Ms. Boykin is making a claim. The Supreme Court has said that is not required, it's not necessary. Did DFW have subjective awareness of its fault? They did. And the Supreme Court also in Cathy has indicated that circumstantial evidence is something that may and probably will be used. They say there will, of course, be times when subjective awareness must be proved, if at all, by circumstantial evidence. And that's what we have here. We've got a sophisticated risk management department that is saddled with every element of a perfect plaintiff's cause of action for an invitee, and they're claiming that, well, we didn't know. And so it seems like that the argument is, well, as long as we don't say we recognize that it's a claim, well, then it's not a claim. And that's not true. In this case, there's certainly a conflict of facts. And the ruling is, the Supreme Court has said that a case like this, where it's challenged, is something that is normally a question of fact. The issue of notice has long been held that it was a question of fact when the evidence is disputed. And here, that's what we have. If at all, I mean, the counsel seems to indicate that they did not know that there was an oily substance, but their records show that there was an oily substance there. And so the plaintiff appellee has presented evidence that DFW did have subjective awareness, that there's an issue of material fact, and that we are requesting that this panel affirm the trial court's denial of the jurisdictional claims in its summary judgment, wherein it claims that the court has no jurisdiction because the actual notice that they had was somehow inadequate and shouldn't count because they have never admitted that it was subjectively enough for them to recognize that it was a claim. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walton. Mr. Anderson, rebuttal?
Yes, Justice. May it please the court. A few points in rebuttal, and I think we should start with Simons. And the plaintiffs are saying that Simons ruled this way, Simons ruled that way. Simons did not. In the Simons opinion, the appeal was dismissed because at that point, the interlocutory appeal based on notice was not a jurisdictional issue. The government code has been amended. But the Simons language that Justice Heck talks about actual notice, doesn't do anything but reinforce DFW's position and reinforce what Booth versus Cathy said. Now, it's all dicta, but it's instructive of what the Supreme Court says and requires in an actual notice case. And it's not that we should have known or that we might have known or that we run a risk management department that does get a copy of every EMS report, and there are several every day that occur at DFW. It's not that we should have known. It's that we had actual subjective awareness
of our potential fault. And here we have a situation just like Carbajal, where the police officer went out, indicated that he investigated a wreck, and in that wreck there were missing barricades. And so the plaintiff in that case said, missing barricades indicate your potential fault. And the Texas Supreme Court said, no, they don't, because they fail to take into account the acts of third-party contractors that may be in the area. Simply because we have a slick spot, which was documented and cleaned by the people who are required, the third-party contractors, to clean that spot, does not mean that DFW has potential culpability or probable fault for the plaintiff's claims. And as a result, there cannot be actual notice given this fact scenario. And the plaintiff raised right at the end that there may be a fact issue. There's not a fact issue here. There are small little facts. But as the Supreme Court has said, if they are legally insufficient, which they are here to create a fact issue, then this court must look at this record and see that it is no different than Benavides, no different than Carbajal, no different than Booth versus Cathy. There are documents, which are all circumstantial in an actual notice case, that indicate that something occurred. But none of them indicates that DFW was at fault. And as a result, this court should reverse the ruling of the trial court and enter judgment in favor of DFW on its motion for summary judgment. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Walton. Thank you for coming down here on this rainy day. We appreciate your arguments. Your case is submitted, and we'll take a minute for the next case to move forward.